In 2005, when the Comprehensive Peace Agreement was signed, the Conference of Bishops in Sudan invited a union of major religious superiors, both men and women, sections of it in Rome, to come and help in rebuilding the new opportunity in South Sudan. And so the union of major religious superiors responded by saying that instead of sending one or two separate religious congregations to work together in capacity building, and chose four areas in which they could help. The areas are the primary school teacher training, health training, in pastoral work with an ongoing formation for laity religious, priests and the church personnel, and then agriculture. These are the four areas that we are involved in, and I am based in Juba as the director of projects at the moment.
Now, you're based in Juba, and we're hearing a lot of news about current events, and just in the middle of April, there seemed to be a huge crisis with some bombardments on the border. What is the situation for the people there at the moment? They were so enthusiastic in July, I remember. Is the impact strong?
The impact of the war is naturally felt throughout the country. What happens during a time of peace is actually people gather themselves and try to rebuild, and this is what the South Sudanese were trying to do since the Comprehensive Peace Agreement was signed in 2005. We could see the development in Juba. Actually, there were no paved roads, and there are many paved roads now, and there were no buildings, and there are many buildings that have come up in the last 4 years, and the people were showing that they are moving into a time of stability, whereas they have lived during the 21 years of war in temporary shelters, where they had to move every now and then out of their own habitat. So the effect of this recent development has brought in naturally a sense of insecurity and instability, and that shows that the prices are going up, the commodities are very scarce, and people are trying to store up things as much as they can. So all sorts of things that come with an unstable situation is happening now in Juba, and there is also a fear that the rumors are being spread that Juba might be attacked, the government might be overthrown, but the president of South Sudan was very clear, saying that all these rumors could be spread, but here I am, people have not overthrown the government, and here I am present in front of you. And so what happens during time of instability is lots of rumors gets spread. And so there is a need at the moment also to give the assurance that there is some sort of stability that is there in the presence of the government there.
The Muslim Council appealed to the international community to step in and mediate, as it did before the referendum. Do you think this is a good idea?
It is a very important aspect that the international community has to get involved in bringing both Republic of Sudan and Republic of South Sudan to the negotiating table. We know that it is through the mediation of the international community that the Comprehensive Peace Agreement was signed. And so now it's also an opportunity that unresolved matters of this comprehensive agreement will have to be worked out with the international community present, so that both the Republic of Sudan as well as the Republic of South Sudan can negotiate and come to settle issues like the oil revenue, issues of border demarcation. And these are very important, and issue of South Sudanese who are living in the north. And these are actually the issues that have not been resolved and that are causing a lot of uncertainty at the moment. And so international community is actually duty-bound to play this role in bringing both the South and the North to the negotiating table so that these issues can be resolved.
You're also mentioning the huge resources that South Sudan does possess, but the need for infrastructure and for investment. And I think the international community has a responsibility in this respect as well.
It has. Actually, the international community has a responsibility towards this. During the time of war, almost all the resources that are in the South were used to develop the Republic of Sudan. And now it is the opportunity that these resources will generate revenue to develop the Republic of South Sudan. And unfortunately, for the last 3 months, the southern government is not able to generate revenue from all these resources that are available in its own land, just because the issues of the oil pipeline is not resolved. So I think international community will have to help this new country to build its infrastructure. And that will happen only when these unresolved issues of border demarcation, oil revenue, the citizenship of the southerners in the north are properly handled. I think it is tied to one another.
You're also mentioning that South Sudan and Sudan see a huge movement as far as displaced people. People are on the move a lot, escaping either a conflict or a border issue or whatever. What is the situation of these people?
Unfortunately, at the moment, there are not only disturbance in the south-north border, but there are also issues that are in South Kordofan, in Nuba Mountains, in Blue Nile, in Darfur. And all these are also creating lots of internally displaced people in the border areas. And as we know, almost all these places are at the border. Now, we know that the situation in South Kordofan is not being spoken as much as the situation in Heglig is spoken. But unfortunately, the recently released report of the Human Rights Watch speaks about the number of children who have been killed, the number of women who have been raped, number of aerial bombardment that are taking place in the South Kordofan area, in Nuba Mountains area. And so there is an issue that needs to be attended to immediately. Now, in the issue of South, Abyei issue became a big issue before the referendum, before the independence of South Sudan. And people of Abyei are still internally displaced in South Sudan, closer to Agok and other places. And hundreds of thousands of people are still living in temporary shelters. Now, Solidarity with South Sudan has recently sent some members to help with the training of teachers in English. We have gone there actually at the invitation of Father Biong, who is a very committed priest of the Diocese of El Obeid, who had stayed with his own people throughout this displacement. And we know that the people need help at this moment. And we know that education is some sort of stability to the people. Even though they are internally displaced, education gives them a sense of stability that their future can be rebuilt on that.
Why is English important?
English is just important because South Sudan has chosen English as the medium of instruction. And as we know, before the Comprehensive Peace Agreement was signed, the medium of instruction was in Arabic. And now shifting the medium of instruction to English means we prepare people to teach in English. We also prepare the children to learn in English. So it is the importance that English has at the moment.
And what about the refugee camps and the emergency aid? Who takes care of that?
Lots of these are being taken care of by many agencies that are operating in south and in the north of both sides of Sudan. We will say that in the south, I know that the Caritas Internationalis is very much present in emergency appeal and as well as helping the people who are internally displaced together with all the other Caritas agencies. I have been with these agencies for meetings, and I know that they have divided themselves to operate in different areas so that the aid is distributed to all the people who are affected by this situation.
And that you are also alarmed for the oncoming rainy seasons for the refugees, right? Can you tell us what happens?
It is true. Actually, we are actually moving into the rainy season, and rain will affect very much the distribution itself because of the infrastructure. There are no roads available, and then the food relief to reach these places will be difficult. And people are actually living under tents. And that means it is also not easy to live under tents during the rainy season, which does not protect them at all. And that means there can be casualties actually during this rainy season. And that is why I think it is important that the international community will urgently try to bring these two sides to negotiate and resettle the people in their own land so that people will be able to live safely as well as build something for their future.
You were telling me of the capacity of the South Sudanese people and this moment of opportunity.
As you know, South Sudan has a lot of resources. It's not only about the resources that are available in the country, but I think the commitment of the South Sudanese today to rebuild their new nation. A lot of the people who had gone out of the country during the years of war are returning so that they can contribute towards rebuilding this new nation. And so this resources and this new opportunity that are available come together so that South Sudan can really build itself as a prosperous nation, because it has enough resources to take care of its own affairs, of its own development. And it is only a matter of time. It's a matter of accompaniment and help to put up the infrastructure that this development could take place. And I think actually, I know that South Sudan has enough people who are committed, people who are capable, and they have enough resources. It's only a matter of putting these things together to bring the best for the country.
Can you explain to us a little how the bishops are organized in Sudan, the bishops' conference, and also if the state is supporting them?
I have to say that truly, these are remarkable spiritual leaders. They have been with the people throughout the war, and they were the strength of the people during the war. And it is also because of their efforts that self-determination was possible for South Sudan. It was actually the bishops who said that we have to put this as part of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement. And so we have to really admire the commitment of these leaders in the church. Now, South Sudan has 7 dioceses, whereas the North has 2. And after the independence of South Sudan, the Conference of Bishops decided that there will be one conference operating with 2 secretariats, one in the North and one in the South. There are 2 dioceses in the North, which is the Diocese of Khartoum, where Cardinal Zubair is the Archbishop of the Archdiocese of Khartoum, and in the South, Archdiocese of Juba, where Archbishop Paulino is the Archbishop of the Archdiocese of Juba. Now, they are actually very committed people, and as you say, during the Synod, they have actively participated in the proceedings, and they are also actively involved in implementing the post-synodal document. Solidarity with South Sudan has held a number of workshops. It is actually in this year, it will have covered almost all the dioceses in the South to disseminate the document that had come out recently, the post-synodal document that came out, calling actually the dioceses to form their pastoral activities with the vision of this post-synodal document, where reconciliation is an important issue, justice and peace is an important issue, intertribal living is an important issue, accountability and transparency is an important issue that this document calls for. So the bishops are committed to what the synod had taught them, and they are also trying to formulate their pastoral program in fulfilling this post-synodal document that came out.
Is the government, so the South Sudanese government, supportive of the bishops and of the church's work?
The government of South Sudan respects the church. I have attended many meetings of the Ministry of Education and Ministry of Health as solidarity with South Sudan is involved in these two areas. And I have heard them saying that mother of education is the church. And so there is a great respect towards the church being the mother of education. And the church is also respected just because church had never left the people. Church was with the people because church is the people. This is what the bishops always say. It's not actually something other than that. It's the people who are the church, and we have been with with the people. The government of South Sudan supports the church as much as it can in reaching out to the people, especially to educate them in the areas of education and health. But at the same time, I have to say the church also is the voice. It's the prophetic voice. And the church has always spoken on behalf of the people, calling the government to accountability, calling the government to justice. So the church is also the prophetic voice there. Sometimes it can come into a conflict, but at this moment I would say the church is the prophetic voice and the government listens to this prophetic voice in South Sudan, and it's a good combination at the moment.
Finally, Father Joseph, you are on your way back as soon as possible. You can't wait to get back. Can you just tell us about your own feelings for South Sudan and your hopes?
My feeling for South Sudan is actually South Sudan has this new opportunity. New opportunity to build itself as the new country that can be a beacon for all the African nations. It has its own resources. It has enough resources. It has also this new opportunity and committed people who can really build this on the social teachings of the church, so that this country will respect the human right, look for the common good. It will deal with issues of justice. And finally, people could live in peace and prosperity. Solidarity with South Sudan was also involved in organizing workshops for the members of parliament in South Sudan, whereby we invited Father David Hollenbach from the Boston College, who is the chair of the human rights desk there, to come and address the new parliament on Catholic social teachings and how to build a nation that is built on Christian values or on values of the social teachings of the church. So my hope is that this nation will have this opportunity. The future of these children will be taken care of, that justice will be done to all, that peace will prevail in that country, and that is the hope of all the members of Solidarity, and that is what we are there for.
Okay, do you have an appeal?
Appeal is actually, you know, just before the referendum took place, Solidarity with South Sudan initiated a prayer campaign called 101 Days of Prayer. And almost when everyone knew that this is not going to happen, 101 Days of Prayer created this opportunity for a new imagination in the people of South Sudan, that people really realized that we need not resolve issues by violence, but we can resolve it by other means. And I think this is again a new opportunity for the international community to support the government of South Sudan to build this new nation. But at the same time, it's an opportunity for the international community to accompany this new nation by prayer. I think people sometimes have never thought that this power of prayer could birth a new nation, and many of the bishops in South Sudan acknowledge that it is because of the power of prayer that this new nation is born. And I suppose all these difficult situations that South Sudan is facing now could be also resolved by the power of prayer. And so it is an invitation for all the listeners to accompany this new nation in prayer.